This is The State of Things. I'm Phoebe Judge. Bob Garner is known throughout North Carolina as the barbecue man. He shares his love of the state's favorite food through recipe books, restaurant reviews, and public television. He has a regular segment on the UNC TV show North Carolina Weekend, where he searches for local favorites and gives his stamp of approval to the worthiest dishes.
Look at this beautiful whole catfish on the bone from Carolina Classic Catfish in Aden. I like to pick it up and eat the whole thing because I know the sweet spot to bite. Mm-hmm.
Garner's newest book is full of recipes and the history of North Carolina foods, from the little-known Neuse River fish stew to the classic Krispy Kreme donuts, Texas Pete hot sauce, and Mount Olive pickles. The book is called Foods That Make You Say, mm-mm. Then Bob Garner joins me now to talk about what makes a food definitively North Carolinian. Welcome, Bob. And I don't think I did justice to that mm-mm.
Well, we'll get to that later.
Okay, yeah. All right. You're known as a barbecue guru. How did you become so obsessed with it?
You know, it was a totally random occurrence after age 50 in my life. I was a working journalist at UNC-TV doing all sorts of general assignment reporting, covering the legislature and so forth. But I was a hobbyist cook. And the folks I worked with knew I knew how to cook barbecue and knew how to cook Eastern North Carolina whole pig. So a chance came along to do some features on iconic North Carolina barbecue restaurants. I was assigned to do it. And that started the whole thing, which inevitably led to my kind of getting out of serious journalism altogether, or at least that form of serious journalism, and into food writing and food reporting.
So this is a big point of argument across the state. What is traditional North Carolina barbecue?
Well, you're kind of in the cradle of barbecue for the entire nation here in the Carolinas. Traditional North Carolina barbecue, which was among the first, is what the earliest settlers found the Native Americans already doing, and that's cooking pigs over beds of live coals. Well, we're pigs. Well, yeah, the Spanish had come in during the 1500s and brought lots of pigs. A lot of them got loose, went back to nature, were feral pigs, and the Native Americans had already figured out that they were mighty fine eating. So the English and the Scots-Irish in North Carolina, the Spanish down on the coast of South Carolina, watched this and picked up on it.
So your actual rite of passage with your wife's family was to go through this cooking of a whole pig.
Yeah, not only that, but to prepare the pig. I mean, we picked out a live pig and slaughtered it and cleaned it and scraped the hair off, and which you do by scalding it with hot water, and prepared it to cook. So, yeah, that was but, you know, I wrote a lot about that over the years. I ended up writing three books about North Carolina barbecue, and I finally decided it was time to kind of move on to explore all these other peculiar or beloved dishes that sort of are a real part of who we are as North Carolinians.
Okay, well, let's get over barbecue. We've done it. And we'll go on to the rest of this book, which you're right, is full of a lot of different traditional North Carolina recipes. Tell us how the book is structured.
Well, it's kind of a sentimental, meandering journey from the North Carolina coastal area up through the eastern North Carolina coastal plain, where we explore odd dishes like Neuse River fish stew, and we look at the traditional Brunswick stew, which actually is in the northeastern quadrant of the coastal plain, and we began to get into eastern North Carolina barbecue territory. We cover that. We head up into the Piedmont, where we get over into to look at some of the baking that the Moravians brought to central North Carolina when they came down to settle what is now Winston-Salem. And oddly enough, Krispy Kreme donuts started in Winston-Salem too, although it had nothing to do with the Moravians, but you'd almost think that it might have. And then we get over into the Western Piedmont and some of the odd dishes that are much loved over there, liver mush being one that comes immediately to mind. Get up into country ham territory up in the mountains of North Carolina. And then kind of use fish and our love for fish of all types to kind of cover us all the way back down from the mountains back to the coast where we started.
So there is an awful lot of variation as you move throughout the state.
Yeah, there really is. It has to do with climate. It has to do with what grows well. It has to do with the patterns of settlement. It has to do sometimes with just pure historical accident. and oddities that people decide to bring into the food scene.
Well, let's move to fish. As you say, it runs throughout the book. And one of those that you mentioned, the Noose River fish stew. What is this?
That is an extremely localized dish that is just part of everyday life in places like Kinston and LaGrange, but a very small geographic area. They used to pull seine nets in the Noose River, catch the fish, and bring them up to the bank and make, some people called it a pine bark stew. They used to build a fire under a pot. And it's really a very simple stew. It's a matter of bacon and potatoes and onions and a little tomato stock and some chunks of fish on the bone. It's not really like anything else. There are some variations of it that are called muddles. They're mostly made with rockfish or striped bass. But if you go very far afield from that particular area, you don't find it. But if you're in that area, men particularly are always getting together to cook these stews. And then when they finish this chunky fish stew, they break eggs into the top of it and poach the eggs in the liquid that has the fish in there. And it is one of the most homely dishes I've ever seen. You could call it ragged. You could. I'm looking at a picture of it. A bowl of it is just not a lovely thing, but it is in people's minds, and it's something that is a communal activity to get together to cook a fish stew. It's done in a very traditional way. Some of the local restaurants there have it every week, and the places are just packed.
Yeah, the book also includes your recommendations for the best places to get some of these things. So what would be a place that someone could go and get some authentic Noose River fish stew?
Yeah, I just finished a TV special based on the book, and I pointed out that not everyone is going to get invited to a Noose River fish stew, but a privately held one, but you can go to Ken's Grill right on Highway 70 in LaGrange, headed toward Moorhead City. It's a very well-traveled road, and they have a very authentic and as good an example of fish stew as you'll find anywhere. So we do that throughout the book, places where you can find some of these dishes, some destinations, some festivals where you can find these foods.
And we're going to have pictures on our website of the Noose River fish stew so you can judge for yourself whether this is a grotesque-looking dish. Let's move on to something that's maybe a little less controversial, and that's Ocracoke fig cake. What is this?
Well, it just is an accident of nature that because of the sandy soil and the climate and so forth, there are a lot of fig trees on Ocracoke and always have been. All the old homes there, practically all of them, have these enormous fig trees. And so it's very popular to make fig preserves in Ocracoke, and a lot of people don't know this. Well, and this is not that old a tradition. Back in the 50s, someone substituted fig preserves in a date nut cake recipe and came up with this dark, moist, aromatic, spicy, sort of a spice cake that some people serve with a buttermilk glaze on it. Some people serve it sometimes with a cream cheese icing or a hard sauce, but most of the time they just serve it just plain. And it's a dark, heavy cake that is absolutely delicious. And you can get a piece of Ocracoke fig cake within minutes of disembarking from the Ocracoke ferry. You can walk down to the fish house right there near the harbor, and the fig cake and the fig preserves are about as popular as the fish you can buy there.
But a little more salty because they're close to the ocean.
Well, I don't know about that. The fig cake is actually quite a dense sweet cake, and I guess maybe they like it because they eat so much, you know, so much fish and so much seafood. But it's served all the time in the guest houses and the B&Bs on Ocracoke, and you can actually send over there and get someone to ship you an Ocracoke fig cake. And of course, now it's served all up and down the Outer Banks in restaurants and so forth.
So North Carolina is pretty famous for its sauces. There are a lot of sauces here. You wrote about one particular sauce that locals in Gastonia really like. What is this sauce?
Yeah, well, let me just first point out that the state is practically, as you say, awash in barbecue sauce, because there are a lot of people who cook, particularly out on farms and in the rural areas, a lot of men who cook, and everyone has a sauce. Someone will tell them, you ought to bottle that, and that's what they do. And so The people making all the money in the sauce business, with a few exceptions, are the people who bottle the sauce for other people. But anyway, this sauce in Gastonia is the strangest thing I've ever seen. They eat it on barbecue sandwiches, which is not the kind of barbecue that we have around here. It's kind of like sliced ham, fresh ham, or it's minced up really fine, which I'm not particularly fond of. But it's a cross between coleslaw and Thousand Island dressing, if you will. It's pink and it's runny, and you don't know whether it's a sauce or a slaw. It's a local specialty. People have grown up on it. Sometimes they'll eat a sandwich without even any barbecue in it, with just the slaw/sauce on the bun. And it's only at one particular place, but it's so popular, it's sold in grocery stores around there. So there you go. That's a good example of a food oddity that is much loved, mainly because it's theirs, and they have a real proprietary feeling about it.
It doesn't sound so bad. I don't know how healthy it is, but it doesn't sound so bad. So the western part of the state, we've been talking a lot about eastern North Carolina and the Outer Banks. Let's go back to North Carolina liver mush, which sounds pretty unappealing.
And it looks even worse. There's a real controversy about whether liver mush actually looks worse or sounds worse or tastes worse, you know, but actually, a lot of people really love it. It's something the Germans brought into the area. It's an offshoot of scrapple, which 18th century German settlers brought down via the Great Wagon Road from Pennsylvania and from other places. They settled heavily in that area. Wherever you find heavy German settlement, you'll find it's called the liver mush crescent, if you will. And it's sort of a finely ground sausage with some cornmeal in there, and a very mild touch of pork liver. Pork liver is not strong like beef liver or chicken liver, so it doesn't. It's sort of a pate consistency. If you fry it, it's crispy on the outside and soft on the inside, but it doesn't have an overwhelming pork taste. So it's very popular as a breakfast meat. It's popular as a sandwich filling, like you would eat a hamburger with lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, and liver mush. And it'll be fried crispy. A lot of times people deep fry it, so it has a very crispy outside. I mentioned it has cornmeal in it, which fries up really crispy. Some people spread it on toast points like pate. Some people eat it for breakfast. Some people put it on pizzas and in the area. And they have festivals. And it's not so much that everyone loves liver mush, but they either love it or they like to make fun of the people who do. And in either case, they come to these festivals and make a big celebration out of it. So people love to go outside of that area and describe liver mush to other people just to sort of evoke the ooh factor, if you will.
I'm speaking with Bob Garner today on the state of things. So these are rather local delicacies. You know, we're hearing about them, very, very specialized parts of the state, liver mush and Ocracoke fig cake. Why do they just stay in their little parts of the state? Why don't we hear about these dishes in other parts of the state?
That's anyone's guess, really. I think the fig cake is probably just local pride keeps that going. They love to have the name Ocracoke associated with it. So they've kind of grasped that and made a big deal of it. They have a fig cake bake-off on Ocracoke. As far as liver mush, they had sort of a swine disease epidemic in a lot of the South when that was really becoming popular. And for some reason, Cleveland County, or the area around Shelby in the southwest Piedmont, escaped this swine disease. So they had pigs to make sausage and liver mush when a lot of other areas did not. So that's why during the 20s and the 30s in particular, when that was kind of developing commercially, they had it, other areas didn't, and it became associated with that area.
So you've traveled all over and you've eaten a lot of barbecue, but what would be the perfect North Carolina meal for you from start to finish?
Well, we're actually planning such a meal based around my UNC TV special. But, you know, I would have to have some oysters from the coast, roasted oysters. I would have to have some fried fish. I've really gotten fascinated with country ham and the deep, complex flavors of that.
Because this is aged, isn't it?
It is. It's cured. There's an old-time producer, one remaining producer up in the North Carolina mountains that still cures country ham the old way. A lot of people do it privately on a very small scale, but you can buy this ham and you soak it and you simmer it in water to get some of the salt out. And it's just this marvelously complex flavor. So I would have to have some country ham. I would have to have some Brunswick stew. I would have to have some collard greens. We grow the world's best collard greens in North Carolina. We have a variety that really only grows very locally down in the coastal plain that's just superb. So it would have to be a mighty big meal stretched over a long period of time to get all my favorites in.
And you could even have a local North Carolina drink. You could have a cheer wine or a
Indeed,
Pepsi,
you could.
Or you've got a lot of options.
Sundrop got its start. It moved away, but Sundrop is a drink that got its big start in North Carolina. And not only that, but we have the world's healthiest Scuppernong grapes. So the wine industry has become very big. They really promote the health benefits of drinking Scuppernong and Muscadine grape wine as far as the health benefits of it. And so we have the largest winery in the southeast down in Duplin County.
You've got everything covered.
Yeah.
Bob Garner is the barbecue man. His newest book is an exploration of North Carolina food called Foods That Make You Say, mm-mm. Probably not good enough yet, but I'm going to keep working on it. You can find
out
more.
You just have to stretch it out a little bit.
Okay,
you have to get into the
You can find out more about his book at our website, stateofthings.org. That's the State of Things for today. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is the technical director. Jess Clark is our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Phoebe Judge.